Welcome back. I'm April Anderson. This is Sunday Morning Live. I'm on air until 11 o'clock this morning if you're tuned in. We've got a great show on the agenda. Now, I am going to be talking next to Dr. Andrea DiNardo, and she's a former psychology professor at University of Windsor, but she also is a teacher at St. Clair College. But before that, and we're talking about the topic of why facts don't change our minds, and this from a psychological perspective, I was talking with during the week with Dr. Ruben Schneier, and he's a psychologist here in Windsor, because I was trying to have him on as well to give his opinion. But he wasn't able to make it this morning, although he would have loved to. But he sent me an email, which was very thoughtful, and I just wanted to read what he had to say about why people are seem more satisfied in winning arguments over facts or over truth, or over what is actually the right thing to do if you have facts. Now, he said, regarding the issue you identified concerning why people do not readily accept facts, it is actually quite interesting how people respond to discrepant views from their own. We all develop theories, understanding rules about the world around us. Some are general theories that most of us agree with that are common to our culture. For example, treat other people as you would like to be treated. However, we also have our own unique theories about how people and the world around us based on our life experience, education, etc. When we are confronted with information or facts that are not consistent with our own beliefs and theories, we can either accept and change our beliefs or reject the new information. For example, if I consider my friend John to be a nice person and someone tells me a story about John lying or doing something bad, I now have a problem. I can accept that John is a bad person, or I can diminish the validity of the story and maintain my positive view of John. For example, the person telling me the story frequently lies or exaggerates. John may just have had a bad day, etc., which happens so often. And this is why I'm reading this, because people sometimes jump quickly to judgments and beliefs about people with really no information to base that opinion. He goes on to say, this issue becomes quite concerning in the area of discrimination and racism. If a person maintains a very negative view toward a certain group of people, any story that supports this view will be remembered and used to validate their perspective. However, these people tend not to accept any positive stories about this group. They would likely consider these positive stories as lies, fabrications, etc. Once these negative views are solidified, it is hard to change these very dangerous attitudes. And before Andrea talks, that is what I see as the big problem as some of Donald Trump's statements. Telling, it doesn't matter, you know, what he believes about the Democrats, or, you know, if he thinks the squad is too radical, or, you know, he thinks their views are too far to the left and unrealistic and socialist. Okay, fine, that's their stance. But, you know, I think that it's going too far, and it's propagating a certain attitude when he says, you know, you can go back to your country and you know, fix the problem in your own country. And if you don't like our country, then leave it. Like, love it or leave it. I don't care what you think. But really, I don't believe that those are positive things to say when you're a leader of a country. I think that just propagates racism. And, you know, even if he didn't mean to be racist, the problem is that he came off that way. And he was at a rally, and there was a bunch of people chanting in the background. And I don't remember exactly what they were chanting, but they were chanting something basically, you know, go back to where you came from. And he kind of allowed it to go on for 10 minutes, and I thought it was absolutely disgraceful. I thought it was disgusting. I thought he should have said, you know what? Okay, let's settle down. Let's really focus on what's important here. But he just kind of allowed it to happen. And you know what? I think that's really dangerous. I think that's a dangerous thing for a president to do. And I think it's a dangerous attitude for him to take. So that's why it got me thinking of, you know, why facts don't change our minds. The problem is that, you know, the Americans have all different sorts of opinions right now about Trump and the Democrats and this, that, and the other thing, when, you know, they're basing a lot of their opinions on with no facts. So they don't have any real information, and they're forming these opinions and beliefs that aren't really based in reality. So that's why I wanted to talk to Dr. DiNardo and a psychologist about what our beliefs mean and why facts don't necessarily change our minds. Like, it is it is a fact that the squad, they're all American, and three of them were in fact born in America. So when Trump says, you know, go back to where you came from, well, they're from America. So what are you talking about? Like, that's one thing. So then, you know, he's propagating this other, you know, idea and this attitude that I don't think is positive for anyone's ears. Anyway, Dr. Andrea, are you there? Hello? Hello? Hello, hello, hello. I don't hear anybody. So we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. I'll be totally... Dr. Andrea, are you there? Dr. DiNardo? Hello? Okay, so we're having a bit of technical difficulty, which sometimes happens time to time. But for those of you who just tuned in, we're talking about why facts don't change people's mind. And really, I brought this question up because there's all kinds of belief systems going on, especially in politics in the United States. And a lot of people's beliefs aren't based on facts. They just believe a certain thing because they believe it, because that's what they want to believe. That's what makes them feel good. But I think that that is a dangerous thing to sometimes, because you can easily judge people.
Okay, can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, are you there? Yeah. What happened? You just came out of nowhere.
First of all, I just want to say this is a fantastic topic, April, and I am so grateful to come on and you know, discuss
well, you see
it with
why
you.
You see why I'm asking the question, because you know, if you see, you look towards American politics, you look towards Canadian politics right now. I mean, people are forming beliefs and opinions that are not based on facts and real evidence. So they, you know, there's this now this huge divide. It's creating a very polarized society. And so I ask the question, you know, how come people don't rely on facts and they just rely more on what makes them feel better? You know, not really, you know, based on anything that, you know, is real evidence. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know 100% what you're saying, because we had the opportunity to talk about social media, and social media gives us this forum of polarization
and that's,
in politics.
Yeah, and people are more interested. Like, politics is becoming entertainment, I would even argue. Like, it is becoming so interesting to the American and Canadian public and in the global stage. I mean, because social media has propagated so many different ideas and beliefs that aren't necessarily based in reality or misconstrued and misinterpreted by, like, billions.
And this is why your radio show, April, and this question is so important, because step one is awareness. So what happens is there are people behind the scenes, not just in politics, but in health behavior, everything. It's all about money. Everything's about money. And so they are hiring social psychologists, because this is a social psychology phenomena, where they're using persuasive techniques to appeal to the fear in us, and I'll bring it back to cognitive dissonance, and I really appreciate Dr. Snare's email and what you talked about at the beginning of the show, right?
Yeah.
And so they know what they're doing. It's conscious, but we don't know what they're doing. So a show like this and this topic opens our eyes to the fact that, April, when someone comes up to you with something that is inconsistent with your belief system. The research on cognitive dissonance in 1957 with Leon Festinger found that people experience physical pain. Physical pain.
When someone confronts them with a belief system that's different from their own.
That's exactly inconsistent.
Okay.
So there's three things that they do. One, and you see that those rallies, they will actually make their belief system stronger. And when they do that, that discounts whatever you're coming up to them with. So even though they would rather have a comfortable lie than an unpleasant truth, because in their body, when you come up to them, they don't know who you are. They don't know where this fact comes from. So they will go to a place that makes that. This is the interesting point, that when you come with a counter argument directly, it makes their belief system stronger. It doesn't weaken it. That's why, in terms of persuasive techniques, you have to come in literally through the back door.
So how do we challenge this as a society? Because we know what's going on, so it's just continually being propagated. And how do you stop that? That's the problem.
Yeah, how do you stop it? First, you make people aware, which is information. Secondly, you act as a role model by doing two things. When you go to present argument, you have to be curious about why their belief system is so strong. So instead of saying, like myself, say, instead of going up to a vegan and saying, why are you a vegan? It doesn't make sense. It's so expensive, et cetera. I would go up to them and say, I'm curious. Like, I would ask them what their belief system is about. And in doing that, their defense mechanisms are lowered. You learn something new. So what you need to do is present both their argument and a counter argument at the same time. Because what happens, cognitive dissonance means that, and I appreciate your explanation at the beginning of the show is really good, it means there's disharmony between belief systems. And so what we try to get our freedom back, because there's also something called psychological reactance. So, you know, April, if someone tells you what to do, what's your immediate response?
I'm sorry, say that again. I was reading a text.
If someone tells you what to do.
Mm-hmm. My immediate response is doing the exact opposite.
Exactly. And that's what happens with facts. Facts are cold. Facts are impersonal. So that we need to almost agree with what they're saying to a certain amount. I want to understand how you feel,
right,
why you feel that way, and then present the counter argument, right? So if I told you what to do, you're going to do the opposite. So you need to really understand the person. Secondly, you need to create a relationship with that person. And then thirdly, ultimately, and I've learned this as a psychologist, April, I can't tell anybody what to do. I can show them what to do. But that's it. Like nobody will be by facts alone. So you, reason doesn't work. Emotion works. Behavior works. Being a role model works. And then ultimately you have to pick your battles.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's difficult to challenge or not challenge or, you know, try to engage in a conversation as to where, like, say, Donald Trump's beliefs come from. You'd have to be inside the system. You have to be internal to his party to say so or reply to one of his tweets. So, like, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. Like, what exactly do you mean here? Like, it's kind of impossible to get, like, a reasonable, you know, it would be impossible to get a reasonable explanation out of Donald Trump about, you know.
So we don't bark up his tree.
No.
We bark up the tree of the people that have an openness, even just the door open a little. It's really the people, not the president. So that you try to understand what motivates them. You know, is it the job situation? Are they in fear? Do they, you know, what are the things that motivate them, and come in from that perspective?
Oh, I think there's a lot of fear that motivates Donald Trump.
Oh,
I think
absolutely.
The man is full of fear. I think that explains his behavior.
Fear is our most basic human motivation. And so somehow that taps into their fear.
But well, a scared man is a dangerous man.
Right. And a scared woman is a dangerous woman, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So even if, let's talk an example in your own life or someone that you know that's closer to home, that you have, you know, we talk about cognitive dissonance, we talk about psychological reactance. This first shows up when we're 2 years old, and that's what the terrible twos are. Your parents tell you what to do, and you want to do the exact opposite to that. So it shows up in healthcare. So I teach in the nursing program, and a very high, like over 50% of patients do not follow through on doctor's orders because they feel like they're being told what to do. So the first thing they need to do as healthcare practitioners is to create a relationship with that patient. So even if they only have 20 minutes, 15 minutes is creating the relationship, then you give the facts. I think the mistake we make is giving the facts first. The facts are last. We know intellectually that's not the issue. The motivation to change our minds is an emotional one. It's not an intellectual one.
Yeah, so there has to be some other stimulant for that to happen.
Right.
Like there has to be some kind of chemical reaction almost, like some other piece of information that is so overpowering to what they believe that they change their minds.
Absolutely.
And that means having to see something or having to experience something firsthand that's emotional for them to go, I was so wrong.
Right. I mean, I almost feel a breath of fresh air in that, because what you're talking about too is perspective taking. That we assume that people can take perspectives from the other side, that they have to say there is a better way, there's another way, because now we start to talk about what motivates people to change and change their mind, change their emotions, and all of those things. It's comfortable to do what you do. So as you quoted, the initial research on cognitive dissonance was about smoking. And if you go up to a smoker and you say you better quit, they're going to smoke two cigarettes out of rebellion. But if you if you suggest a better way, that, you know what, I understand why you smoke. You know, it's a stress reliever. What is more motivating to you than smoking? And I do this with my students. And for them, it's the idea of a vacation. Well, how about you use that money that you're using for smoking to save up for a vacation? So that's something that motivates them even more than the cigarettes. So say in the rallies when you talk politics or somebody in your life, why is that fact? You know, get curious about the fact. Why are they so hanging on to it? What's underneath it? And that's what psychology is all about. It's going below the surface.
Well, I think that the, you know, anti-Trump, I mean, there's fear underneath it. They don't, they're trying to get a win for their party. But I think, you know, the whole Russian collusion thing, like them even pushing that and pushing those beliefs when there wasn't any real facts to support that, it was more motivated just by fake news, or, you know, what they heard in the news and things that weren't really real. And then,
right.
And then you get this, just this idea that just it, that polarizes a society, like, essentially.
Because when we're in that place, which is fear, which is the lower part of our brain, we're in the animal instinct, and it's fight or flight, which is completely separate part to the rational part of the brain. So really, when we're in fear, when we're in cognitive dissonance, we are triggered to a place in our life where we're fighting for our life. So if you were to poll some of the people that follow Trump, it could be that their entire family has been without work for years. So it's not even Trump, it's the promise of what Trump is saying.
Right.
So if we address the fear, if we make them feel safe, if we offer a rational alternative, and this applies to all different areas of our lives, then people will be more likely to listen.
Very well be true. A lot of the things he's saying, he may very well really mean all those things. I think he does in a lot of cases. I think he gets off. I think, and we had a text come in that says, you know, I really like Donald Trump, but I think he should have ignored the ignorant people against him. He reacted to the squad. And I agree with that. I don't think he should have reacted the way he should have when he was squad to AOC.
They get out of the country and they were American.
Alluded to that, yeah.
Right. But if there's no consequences to that behavior, then it'll just keep on happening.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and the American public, they're pro-Trump supporters, and there are many of them, you know, they will just take on, you know, the belief, you know, he's president, this is what he believes, and he can say what he wants.
And see, what you're adding to is what's called groupthink.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why the perspective of what needs are being met, so full circle, how can we meet those needs, and is it possible? You know, that a lot of people don't change until there's some kind of devastation. So they'll believe it until it doesn't happen, and then to see the way that the polls will go. But the reason, I mean, your initial question, the reason that facts don't change minds is because we hold on. Our belief system has been in our system 42 years, 48 years, 50 years. You're standing in front of somebody for a minute and they're just going to dismiss it. But if you take the time, right? Because think about yourself. I told you what to do. Who are you? Like, you don't believe them. You're skeptical of them and all of these things. And if you take the time to make a relationship, if you in some way agree and understand. So I understand why you follow Trump. Your family has been without
work for 5
years.
Exactly.
Yeah. And all of these things. And then go in that way. And then provide an alternative. And then the thing is, it's so easy for us to dismiss ourselves. We have to think about ourselves on the other side of it. It's so easy to dismiss somebody who doesn't agree with our belief system, with our way of being. You know, reflect on where have we had cognitive dissonance and not really open up to things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible to be self-aware and reflect on making changes if you know maybe there's a negative impact to your health. I mean, that's something that happens that makes you rethink your smoking habit.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, and that's on a smaller scale outside of politics. I think it's, you know, what are the benefits of opening up to facts versus, you know, just continuing on with what you believe because that's what you're most that's your comfort zone?
The benefits are growth, evolution, emotional freedom, passion, interest, thriving, being optimistic, hopeful, because life is pretty boring if we do the same thing over and over again. And it's just a life filled with fear. And if we go beyond our current facts and our belief systems. That's when we meet new people. That's when relationships flourish. That's
opportunities open up.
Absolutely. All of those things. But fear, you just stay stuck, and fear is a liar. There's nothing truthful about fear. That's when it's easy for people to take advantage of you. But when you're open-minded and when you are more trusting of, you know, something beyond your current viewpoints, then it's new.
All right. I think we may have lost Andrea, but that's okay because we have to go. Andrea, if you're listening, thank you so much. That was a very eloquent. Are you there? That was a very eloquent. I think we lost her. She cut out, you know, technology. But that was a very eloquent explanation and ending as to some of the benefits of being more open-minded and maybe reflecting more on your beliefs and being more self-aware as to why you're thinking certain things and believing certain things. And especially when it comes to, you know, thinking about other cultures or ethnicities or, you know, just your attitude generally. Is it positive or negative towards certain groups or people? Like Dr. Ruben Schneer was saying, he said, you know, that's where it becomes a negative, and when negative views are solidified, he said it's hard to change these attitudes. And that's why, you know, keeping in check with yourself, basically what Andrew was saying, is important, because it leaves you open to growth and evolution and opportunity. So that's the benefit of it. Anyway, we could go on and on and on about this, but I have to go to a break. News is coming up at 9:30. After the news, I'm going to talk a little bit about Arianna Huffington and something she had to say about setting alarm clocks last week. It was interesting. I'm April Anderson. This is Sunday.